Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chava Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayen. Nasta Prayeshwa Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Please turn to page 282, at least in this edition. That's chapter 17 of the first canto, text 39. We're going to finish the chapter, except for one verse, which will be topic of tomorrow's class. Everyone got it? 17:39. Okay, let's chant this one. Punam. Again. Cha. Also. Yachamanaya. To the beggar. Jata rupam. Gold. Adat. Gave away. Prabhu. The king. Tataha, whereby, anritam, falsehood, madam, intoxication, kamam, lust, rajaha, on account of a passionate mood, variram, enemy, cha, I'm sorry, that's enmity, yeah, cha, also, panchamam, the fifth one. Punascha yachamanaya. Jata rupam adat prabhu. Taton ritam adam kamam. Rajo vairam chapanchamam. Punascha yachamanaya. Jata rupam adat prabhu. Tato nritam adam kamam. Rajo vairam chapanchamam. Please chant.
Punascha yachamanaya.
Jata rupam adat prabhu.
Tato nritam adam kamam.
Vairam cha panchamam.
Punascha
yachamanaya.
Jata rupam adat prabhu.
Tatom ritam madam kamam.
Rajo vairam cha panchamam.
Punascha yachamanaya.
Jata rupam adat prabhu.
Tatom ritam madam kamam.
Rajo vairam cha panchamam.
Punascha yachamanaya.
Jata rupam adat prabhu.
Tato nritam adan kamam.
Rajo vairam cha panchamam.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Kali asked for something more, and because of his begging, the king gave him permission to live where there is gold, because wherever there is gold, there is also falsity, intoxication, lust, envy, and enmity. So this comes on the heels of King Parikshit offering Kali a place to stay. Kali's beating the cow, and the king says, "What are you doing?" And Kali says, "I'm sorry, I'm taking shelter of you. You can't kill me because I'm taking shelter of you." So the king says, "All right, you can stay in my kingdom wherever there is illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat-eating going on." And so Kali says, "There's nowhere where this is going on in your kingdom. None of these things are happening. So you have to give me somewhere else." So here the king is saying, "All right, you can stay wherever there is gold being hoarded." So this is his strategy. So let's read the purport, please. You want to start here? Mics are working?
Okay. Although Maharaj Parikshit gave Kali permission to live in four places, it was very difficult for him to find the places because during the reign of Maharaj Parikshit, there were no such places. Therefore, Kali asked the king to give him something practical which could be utilized for his nefarious purposes. Maharaj Parikshit thus gave him permission to live in a place where there is gold, because where there is gold, there are all the above mentioned four things, and over and above them, there is enmity also. So the personality of Kali became gold standardized. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, gold encourages falsity, intoxication, prostitution, envy, and enmity.
Even a gold standard exchange and currency is bad. Gold standard currency is based on falsehood because the currency is not on a par with the reserved gold. The basic principle is falsity because currency notes are issued in value beyond that of the actual reserved gold. This artificial inflation of currency by the authorities encourages prostitution of the state economy. The price of commodities becomes artificially inflated because of bad money or artificial currency notes. Bad money drives away good money. Instead of paper currency, actual gold coins should be used for exchange, and this will stop prostitution of gold. Gold ornaments for women may be allowed by control, not by quality, but by quantity. This will discourage lust, envy, and enmity. When there is actual gold currency in the form of coins, the influence of gold in producing falsity, prostitution, etc., will automatically cease. There will be no need of an anti-corruption ministry for another term of prostitution and falsity of purpose.
All right, let's discuss this briefly. This purport, of course, is written in 1962-61. India is fairly newly independent, and a big problem in the government is corruption, so much so that the government establishes an anti-corruption ministry, which to Prabhupada is a joke. And he is saying the root cause of the problems of the society are the gold standard. That is, we use that phrase a little bit differently in America, but the idea of the gold standardization is that the currency is pegged to the amount of gold that the government has. If the government has a certain amount of gold, they can print that much money, and any citizen can take a dollar or a currency note and exchange it for an equivalent amount of gold. So that is no longer the standard anywhere that I know of. It was the standard in America until 1971, I believe. And then Richard Nixon abolished it. So that allows the government to print as much money as they want. the value of the currency, therefore, actually decreases. So we see it today that the value of gold has gone up, I don't know, at least 400%. In recent years, right, Jai Krishna, something, and meanwhile the value of money is going down, the value of currency is going down. So Prabhupada calls this prostitution of the state economy. That is just exploitation by politicians who would rather not take the difficult decisions of balancing a budget, and would instead rather just say, well, I'll get reelected if I throw money in my district or in my area. So easier to just pass legislation, print more money, give it away, then I'll get reelected, which is really all I'm concerned about. So we're going to talk more about money in society as we go on, but just to make sure this purport is clear. Any questions about this? Okay, so let's move on to the next verse. Dvijamani, would you read the translation and purport, please, verse 40?
The Thus the personality of Kali, by the direction of Maharaj Parikshit, the son of Uttara, was allowed to live in those five places.
Thus the age of Kali began with gold standardization, and therefore falsity, intoxication, animal slaughter and prostitution are...
Thus the age of Kali began with gold standardization, and therefore falsity, intoxication, animal slaughter and prostitution are rampant all over the world. And the same section is eager to drive out corruption. The saner section, I should say. Eager to drive out corruption. The counteracting process is suggested above, and everyone can take advantage of such suggestion. Okay. That continues. We're going to skip verse 41. Is this working now? No. Okay, good. So please go on to verse 42. Shashi, you want to read?
Thereafter, the king re-established the lost legs of the personality of religion, the bull, and by encouraging activities, he sufficiently improved the condition of the earth.
And purport?
By designating particular places for the personality of Kali, Maharaj Parikshit practically cheated Kali. In the presence of Kali, Dharma, in the shape of a bull, and the earth, in the shape of a cow, he could actually estimate the general condition of his kingdom. And therefore, he at once took proper steps to reestablish the legs of the bull, namely austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. And for the general benefit of the people of the world, he saw that the gold stock might be employed for stabilization. Gold is certainly a generator of falsity, intoxication, prostitution, enmity, and violence. But under the guidance of a proper king or public leader, or a Brahmin or sannyasi, the same gold can be properly utilized to reestablish the lost legs of the bull, the personality of religion.
Maharaj Parikshit, therefore, like his grandfather Arjuna, collected all illicit gold kept for the propensities of Kali and employed it in the Sankirtan Yajna as per instruction of the Srimad Bhagavatam. As we have suggested before, once accumulated wealth may divide it into three parts for distribution, namely 50% for the service of the Lord, 25% for the family members, and 25% for the personal necessities. Spending 50% for the service of the Lord or for the propagation of spiritual knowledge in society by the way of Sankirtan Yajna is the maximum display of human mercy. People of the world are generally in darkness regarding spiritual knowledge, especially in regards to the devotional service of the Lord. And therefore, to propagate the systematic transcendental knowledge of devotional service is the greatest mercy that one can show in this world. When everyone is taught to sacrifice 50% of his accumulated gold for the Lord's service, certainly austerity, cleanliness, and mercy automatically ensue, and thus the lost three legs of the personality of religion are automatically established. When there is sufficient austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, naturally Mother Earth is completely satisfied, and there is very little chance for Kali to infiltrate the structure of human society.
Okay. Brother Harper, would you like to read here text 43 and 44, translation? Any questions on this, by the way? We will come back and discuss this in more detail. Go ahead, please.
The most fortunate emperor, Maharaj Parikshit, was entrusted with the kingdom of Hastinapur by Maharaj Yudhisthira when he desired to retire for the forest, is now ruling the world with great success due to his being glorified by the deeds of the kings of the Kuru dynasty.
Prolonged sacrificial ceremonies undertaken by the sages of Namisharanya were begun shortly after the demise of Maharaj Parikshit. The sacrifice was to continue for 1,000 years, and it is understood that in the beginning some of the contemporaries of Baladev and the elder brother of Lord Krishna also visited the sacrificial place. According to some authorities, the present tense is also used to indicate the nearest margin of time from the past. In that sense, the present tense is applied to the reign of Maharaj Parikshit here. For a continuous fact, also, present tense can be used. The principles of Maharaj Parikshit can still be continued, and human society can be improved if there is determination by the authorities. We can still purge out from the state all the activities of immortality introduced by the personality of Kali.
Yeah, immorality, right?
immorality, immorality introduced by the personality of Kali if we are determined to take action like Maharaj Parikshit. Mm-hmm. He allotted some place for Kali, but in fact Kali could not find such places in the world at all because Maharaj Parikshit was strictly vigilant to see that there was no places for gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter.
Modern administrators want to banish corruption from the state, but fools as they are, they do not know how to do it. They want to issue licenses for gambling houses, wine and other intoxicating drug houses, brothels, hotel prostitution and cinema houses, and falsity in every dealing, even in their own. And they want, at the same time, to drive out corruption from the state. They want the kingdom of God without God consciousness. How can it be possible to adjust two contradictory matters? If we want to drive out corruption from the state, we must first all organize society to accept the principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. And to make the condition favorable, we must close all places of gambling, drinking, prostitution, and falsity. These are some of the practical lessons from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Okay, very good. Last, and then the last verse in purport, and we're through with the chapter.
Maharaj Parikshit, the son of Abhimanyu, is so experienced that by dint of his expert administration and patronage, it has been possible for you to perform a sacrifice such as this.
The Brahmanas and the Sannyasis are expert. In the spiritual advancement of society, whereas the Kshatriyas or the administrators are expert in the material peace and prosperity of human society. Both of them are the pillars of all happiness, and therefore they are meant for full cooperation for common welfare. Maharaj Parikshit was experienced enough to drive away Kali from the field of activities and thereby make the state receptive to spiritual enlightenment. If the common people are not receptive to spiritual, it is very difficult to impress upon them the necessity of spiritual enlightenment. Austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, the basic principles of religion, prepare the ground for the reception of advancement in spiritual knowledge. And Maharaj Parikshit made this favorable condition possible. Thus, the rishis of Nimisharanya were able to perform the sacrifices for 1,000 years. In other words, without state support, no doctrines of philosophy or religious principles can progressively advance. There should be complete cooperation between the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas for this common good. Even up to Maharaj Ashoka, the same spirit was prevailing. Lord Buddha was sufficiently supported by King Ashoka, and thus his particular cult of knowledge was spread all over the world.
And thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports for the first canto, 17th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Punishment and Reward of Kali. So again, tomorrow, Bhakti Vasudeva Maharaj will read text 41 on this from this chapter. So... Maharaj Parikshit offered Kali a place to live where gold was being hoarded, and then he promptly went out and collected all the gold in his kingdom and used it for Sankirtan. So in this way, he kept Kali out. But after his demise, which we'll read about in the next chapter, then Kali was able to get in through the gold. And this is the beginning of this transition from the previous age to the age of Kali, in which we're currently living. So... The basic topic here is gold and money. So let's discuss a little bit in terms of our practical experience with this subject. Religious life, spiritual life, is not separate from money. Money is part of it. But how does it fit in? That's what I'd like to discuss this morning. So Prabhupada is talking about the gold standard, and all the gold that has been mined in the history of the world, at least according to modern estimates, would fill 2 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So it's a very scarce commodity, and yet everybody has a little bit of it. You know, so the different orders of life in society, different varnas and ashrams, each have a different relationship with money. As far as the spiritual side, the ashrams are concerned, brahmacharis should have no money. Krishna Kripa Prabhu is the ideal example. Yeah. He travels all over the world every year, and every trip he's trying to collect the money for the next ticket. Has he asked anyone here beside me? So he is the ideal brahmachari in that respect. And to live as a brahmachari, as a celibate student, and keep a bank account is not a good combination. At the same time, there are those who are making the transition from brahmachari to grihastha life who have no intention of remaining in the renounced ashram, and that's a different situation. But in general, the beauty of brahmachari life is that you don't have to worry about money. See, that's the point, not that you want to be poor, but just you don't have to worry about it. You know, just a place to sleep, a little prasadam, some service, and chant Hare Krishna. And it's a very sweet life. So after brahmachari life is grihastha's life, and that is a life that is very specifically dedicated to raising money. We'll get back to it in a moment, but just consider the subsequent two ashrams, vanaprastha, those who go to the forest or, you know, stop earning, basically, and sannyasis, who sa means with and yas means nothing. So sannyas means total renunciation. And sannyasis just live at the mercy of society. They just live at the mercy of others. And people give them charity gladly because it is a way for them to purify their hearts and their lives. So it's of the four ashrams, the four orders of life, only the grihasthas really are meant to have a lot of money. So that is very much the dharma, the duty of a grihastha to generate the money. Otherwise, society is broke. See? So for grihasthas, this is your prime service to Krishna, really, is to generate money sufficiently for your family and for supporting other dependents. So we're talking about a varnashram system that doesn't exist in America, but this is an ideal for human society, how society can be very functional. So family, without the impetus for family life, no one will have any impetus to make money. It costs $250,000 to raise a child in America. I was just thinking, my little granddaughter was born a few days ago, so I wonder if she just came out with a price tag, $250,000. Would her parents have bought her? I don't know. Yes, they would, of course. But the point is, it's a huge commitment. It costs somebody $250,000, and if the parents can't raise it and they become wards of the state, it's all very high pressure. But this is how grihasthas become purified. Grihastha life is based on sex, and then after sex life comes all the implications of sex life. Ato griha kshetra sutapta vritaya. In the fifth canto, Lord Rishabhdev talks about this to his sons. He says, Pumsa, which means man, Striya, which means woman, Maituni, with sex attraction, Bhavam Etam. So when man and woman get together, there's immediately sex attraction. Tayorapi Hridaya Grantim, Ahu. And then there's a Hridaya Granti, this knot in the heart that is tied between them. So once that is all accomplished, that's very easy to do. You can do that on a Friday night, you know. But then, ato griha. First you have to have a place, a field of activities, an apartment or house, kshetra, your area of employment, sutapta, and then all the wonderful relatives start dropping in. Vrittire, and you need money to pay for the whole show. Janasya mohoyam. In this way, life, moha, is imbued with illusions, aham ameti, based on the idea that this is, that I am this body and this is my possession. Okay? When I was raising my kids, I saw one of the first things they said, the first concepts they learned was mine. Okay? Mine. You know, even before mom and dad, it was mine. So, aham ameti, illusion for the grihastha is that this is now my domain and my kingdom. So that illusion is purified by Krishna consciousness, by being aware of the spiritual values in life, that you have learned as a brahmachari, as a single person. See, that this is how the system works very nicely. Even though the grihasthas are imbued in illusion and just immersed in it, they remember the spiritual training, their youth, and they understand this is really not a lasting, permanent situation. This is how we get South Florida, you know. And people think that I have attained perfection here with my money and my family and my empire, and nothing's going to change. And then they just wrinkle away and become more and more ridiculous, trying to perpetuate some situation which they cannot maintain. See? Is that the state motto?
Actually, I've seen a shirt, so I've seen some corporations this quarter, where America comes to die.
Oh. That's good for us. I mean, we're good at dying. Yeah. We are experts in cooking and dying. So it's true. Nobody dies like the Hare Krishnas die. You know, because we put a value on spiritual education in youth, and we understand that this whole situation of material existence is just a phase. Prabhupada said that a piece of coal becomes a diamond under pressure. And in my experience, that is grihastha life. That grihastha life is high pressure, because you have dependents, you have so many responsibilities, and in order to keep up your Krishna consciousness and meet your responsibilities, you don't really have a lot of room to slack. If you're going to chant 16 rounds, you have to really devote a lot of your spare time to that cause. You know, what to speak of reading and chanting and associating with devotees and all of these things which are so nourishing to spiritual life. You really have to value them and therefore invest your time. Then, in addition, the pressure is there because you have to produce economically. So that experience leaves you, if you are successful in navigating it, it leaves you with a real sense of freedom and opportunity for spiritual development in the latter stages of life. That's why devotees are good at dying. That because we know what is the purpose of life, and all of the fear, the subtle but pervasive fear of trying to maintain a material empire is gone. That huge burden is lifted from the back of the devotee. See, we never expected it to be permanent, and when it's run its course, we're very grateful, and we understand. So this is the role of money in the ashram system. I would just like to add that grihasthas have to become really expert in handling money because they're the only ones who do it. And becoming expert means you know how to save. You know, this is the biggest fall down, especially for young people. They get a little money and they blow it. You know, and I did the same stupid thing. Okay, I at first was developing an income. First thing I did was go out and buy a car that was way too expensive. You know, and that thing was such a burden for years, and finally got rid of it. I was so glad and got a car I could actually afford. So, you know, the other stupid thing that people do is they buy cars instead of buying a house. They put all their money into a car, and then they don't get land. So getting your own house, your own place to live, is the absolute cornerstone of economic independence. And you've got your own dirt, then every month you're making a payment on it, then you're increasing your net worth if you bought well. See? So these are just basic lessons of grihastha life. Just to become very protective. See, money is Lakshmi. And Lakshmi is always with Narayan. Right? So there is this relationship, which we'll talk about in a moment. But we have to respect Lakshmi and treat her as the associate of the Lord that she is. That means that nothing should be wasted. You know, no light should be left on. There's a story of Prabhupada climbing up three flights of stairs to turn off a light that some thoughtless devotee had left on. So, no extravagant, unnecessary luxuries. If we live like that, then we'll always have money for what we need. That's the point. So grihastha life means that you need to have money to meet your necessities. Otherwise, you have to beg from the government, beg from relatives, and it's very detrimental to spiritual life. So let's talk about the varnas now, the occupational side. There are shudras, vaishyas, kshatriyas, and brahmins. So the shudras are by far the most numerous members of society. If you give the shudra money, what do they spend it on? Intoxication, right. They're just sense gratification in general. They're going to go to prostitutes or naked dance shows. They're going to go to, eat ridiculous foods and then get drunk and gambling. Yeah, just waste. Just all of the pillars of sinful life. That's what the shudras will do. Any shudras in Gainesville that you noticed? Right. So that's where so much money goes. I mean, the billions of dollars people spend on smoking and alcohol. Just a huge waste, you know. This is because there is no government. We'll get to that in a moment, the kshatriyas. Now, the sudras blow it. Therefore, they're meant to be just cared for. So they never have economic anxiety. They don't have to worry about keeping money because they're employed and they are engaged and they are cared for. And so their simple necessities are met and they don't have to worry about it. This is, again, not really available in Kali Yuga America, but this is the idea. The people who are thus oriented, which are the majority of people, should just be able to live a peaceful life without having to worry about money. Vaishyas are those who naturally get really fired up when there's an opportunity to make money. They don't worry about how the money's going to be used. They just really want to make money. They see, for example, in the purest sense, that cows eat grass and then they produce milk, and they also, the bulls pull the plow, so there's energy, there's food from grass, which we can't use, therefore it's a good economic opportunity. So they raise cows, take care of them, harvest their gifts, and they're considered, you know, very valuable. That's the cornerstone of the Vaishya in society, you know, their economic system. Even in Kali Yuga, you see that. As you drive through America, you see cattle grazing everywhere. Why are they grazing? Because it's a lazy man's way to make a buck, you know. Just get them out there and then just sell their body and you get $4 a pound for about 400 pounds of beef that you glean from that carcass. So there's $1,600 eating grass in my field, you know. This is how, unfortunately, the perverted Vaishya mentality has evolved. But people who are excited about making money, they are Vaishyas. Then the Kshatriyas, who are even a smaller number, it's like a pyramid. Shudras most numerous, then Vaishyas, then Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas are the administrators, and they have a right to take money from the Vaishyas because they're managing the state. So the general principle was 25%, just a flat 25% of whatever the Vaishya would produce, that would go to the government. And the king, the governor, would go around and collect this money. So that then they were meant to provide good services, good roads, good protection, efficient administration of justice. This is the duty of the government. And for that service, the people are very happy to pay 25% because it's a good, they're getting good return and they value it. So it's a very congenial system, not that you go to jail if you don't pay. See? So then finally the Brahmins subsist on charity. They do not keep money. They do not work for money. They are the smallest percentage of society, totally dedicated to spirituality. completely dedicated to spirituality. This is the meaning of a Brahmin. So a Vaishnava, devotee of Krishna, can act in any one of these four varnas. It is not that you're restricted to one or another, although you may have a propensity for any one of them. So the Brahmana has a propensity for understanding philosophy, understanding spirituality, and then teaching it and making sure that it's pure and protected in society. That is a highly valued service. And thus, the Kshatriyas are always inclined, as we're reading in this purport, to support the Brahmins. Prabhupada gave the example of Maharaj Ashok, who was the emperor at the time of Lord Buddha, about 2,500 years ago. And under his patronage, Buddhism spread all over Eastern Asia. So it was later driven out of India by Shankaracharya. But that's another thing. So you hardly find, there's only one Buddhist, major Buddhist shrine in all of India. That's at Gaya, where Buddha was born. Otherwise, Buddhism is only practiced elsewhere, by and large. So, Maharaj Ashok was the last example of the Kshatriya supporting the Brahmins. Now, what have we got in America? It's separation of church and state. You know, very strictly, the government is not supposed to give any money to anyone who is religious, because unless they're doing social work. See? And religion has become so devoid of spirituality that to most people that's all it means, is social work. You know, so there is some connection there. Government funds social projects from, but they don't fund anyone to teach people how they're not their body. They don't fund anyone to teach Sankirtan Yajna. You know, they certainly don't fund anyone to teach Srimad Bhagavatam or to help people understand who they are. They have an ethic that the state should not push any religion. This is a result of the Church of England being integrated with the government of England. So this was the milieu in which the founding fathers of America basically left. And they saw that the corruption was there so intensely that they did not want any part of it in their new country. So they constitutionally separated that. What Prabhupada says, that's fine, but the government should see that anyone who's propounding spirituality actually knows what they're talking about. That's the government responsibility. Not to push one form of religion or another, but to make sure that what is being taught in the name of spirituality is actually spiritual. Not the church of Monday night football. You know, you get a tax exemption just by saying, okay, here is our religious gathering, we get our services are held Monday nights, and we drink our sacred sacraments, and we eat our sacred food. So, anyway. So, there is an ethic in our society that if you are religious, the Lord will be good to you and give you money. And if you're not religious, or if you don't have money, it means because you're not right with the Lord. You ever hear that, Chaitanya? Mm-hmm. So you got to get right with the Lord, and then you'll have money. And if you got money, that's a good sign you're right with the Lord. So see how meshed the whole thing has become, like a big kichri, a philosophical kichri. In fact, the relationship between spirituality and money is far more nuanced than that. Okay? Money is the first entry point for Kali. So if the person does not know how to use money and they get it, then their spiritual life is ruined. The example is Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva. So they were sons of Kuvera, the treasurer of the gods, the really rich dude. And so his sons were both found by Narada Muni just drinking, cavorting with young girls in the water, naked. And when Narada Muni, the great sage, came by, all the girls were embarrassed and they covered themselves and got out of the water. But the boys just stood there, clothed by the four directions. And so Narada talked with him, and the first thing he said is that it is the money that has made you so stupid. And he extols the advantages of poverty in that little section. He says that people who are poor automatically don't engage in sense gratification because they can't afford it. And because they're not engaged in sense gratification, saintly people like to associate with them. So they get the double advantage, as he speaks about the advantage of poverty. And for the boys, he said, anyway, you like to stand there naked, so become trees for several thousand years, which they did. And trees are naked all the time. So the other example on the other side is Sudama. Now, Sudama was very, very poor Brahmin. And he was so poor that he really couldn't get enough nourishment. And his wife was concerned about that. Sometimes she's painted as a hen-pecking wife, but actually she was just concerned that her husband was not thriving. So she said, look, you're friends with Krishna from your childhood. Krishna's very generous. He's the king of Dwarka. Why don't you go and ask him for a little charity? So he went. Of course, he said, I can't go empty-handed. So she begged a little chipped rice, the cheapest kind of rice, tied it in a bundle, and he carried that. So there he was before his splendid friend Krishna in this gorgeous palace with all this opulence. But he was just so happy to see Krishna, and that he was totally satisfied with that. And he didn't. And then he was so overwhelmed by the opulence, he said, I can't give him a little packet of chipped rice. So Krishna said, have you brought me something? No. I see, what are you hiding there in your clothes? And he reached in and took it. Oh, you brought me chipped rice. This is so good. He ate the raw rice. And his wife, Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, said, don't eat it all. If you eat it all, then you'll be so obligated to him that I won't be able to provide you everything you'll need to repay him. So, and then Sudama was so happy, and then he left without asking any charity at all. He was a Brahmin, and he had the right to ask Kshatriya for charity. But he was so happy to see Krishna, his friend, that he didn't even think about it, and he just went back to his home. And then he realized on the way home, I didn't ask him for anything. Probably he was thinking, what is my wife going to say? But when he got back to his little hovel, he said, what's going on? There's a huge palace. And then his wife came out dressed in beautiful silks with servants and horses and all the accoutrements of opulence. And she took him through the palace. Look what has happened to our little hovel. And the beautiful marble and gold inlaid and jewels everywhere. And then Sudama could understand that if Krishna is pleased with you, he can give you everything. But he thought that Krishna never gave me opulence before because he was afraid it would ruin me. So somehow he feels that I'm ready to handle this opulence, and therefore he's giving it to me. This was Sudama's thought. So this is the relationship of money and devotional service. That when we are ready to use the money for Krishna, Krishna can give us unlimited amounts. One of my mentors once said that any fool can make money, but it takes intelligence to spend it. So can you really use it for Krishna's service? If so, then Krishna will give you more and more. See, that takes actual realization and detachment. So there's karma involved in money. Some people are born with a lot of money, some are not. If you are born with money, that's a sign that from your past lifetime you had some yoga practice. You know, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashta Bhajayate. Arjuna asks Krishna, what happens if I try yoga and I fall down and I fail? And Krishna says, there's no loss. The worst that can happen is you'll take birth in the family of either pious people or rich people or both. So if one is born in a rich family, there's not the constant pressure, how am I going to survive day to day? So if that one is so fortunate to have that freedom, then at least the opportunity is there to pursue yoga practice from the past life instead of having to worry about how am I going to survive. But if we use that money for sense gratification, then it's all ruined. See, in the first canto, early in the second chapter, you might remember this verse that Prabhupada said was the most important in Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharmasya hyapavargasya nartob tayupakalpate nartasya dharmakantasya kamo labhaya hismrita. Economic development should only be used for the purpose of liberation. And the pursuit of liberation should never be used for economic development. This is the point. So, in other words, you don't mix religion and spirituality, money and spirituality. So, as far as money is concerned, most of you are going to be grihasthas, so there's a few principles. One of them is do what you love and the money will follow. Do what you love and the money will follow. If you make money itself the goal, then that will be a cause of great stress in your life and unhappiness. You know, if you find something you can do that generates money that you love to do, that is by far the more intelligent approach. Do something you really like to do. You'll get up in the morning to do it. And if it's a genuine contribution to the world, then the money will take care of itself. And here we read, give 50% for spirituality. Make checks payable to Krishna House, please. And 25% for personal emergencies and 25% for family maintenance. So this is the ideal that was set by Rupa Goswami. It is not always very easy to observe that. Unless you become very, very wealthy, it's very difficult to observe that. So if you can't give 50% of your money, try to give 50% of your free time for Krishna service. And give something. You know, something must be there. There's a story of the man who went to the deity and prayed, please. He actually was very rich, but he was very cheap, so he'd always give very little. But then his business started going south, so he was in trouble. So he went to the deities and prayed, please, please, my Lord, if you'll let my business recover, I promise I'll sell my house and I'll give all the proceeds to you. So then, miraculously, his business started going well again. He started prospering, all right, and the deal started coming and everything was going good, and then he remembered his promise. Oh! So the next day in the paper, there was an ad. House for sale. 3-car garage, swimming pool, 6 bedrooms, 3 baths, 2 acres, $1. So people saw, this must be a misprint. And people started calling, what is this, $1? No, it's just $1. Well, what's the catch? Well, you have to buy my cat also. Well, how much is your cat? $999,999. So finally, someone bought the house and the cat. And the man went to the temple with $1 here. My Lord, there is your... So this is the antithesis of money and spirituality, right? What we want to do is use as much money as we can for the Lord while being responsible to our family needs. It's very difficult to give more than that unless you become extremely prosperous. But you have to save 25%, spend 25%, and give 50% to the Lord. That's the ideal standard. All right, so any questions or comments on this deep subject? Money and spirituality. Yeah.
I have a question about the corporate. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada says they want to issue full, where is it? They want to issue licenses for gambling houses, wine and other intoxicating drugs, brothels, hotel prostitution, and cinema houses. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering, why is movies included in all these things?
No, this is the idea. Prabhupada is writing this in 1960 India, in which cinema was just becoming more and more popular. And it was bringing in a lot of materialism that was not there before. So Prabhupada is writing from that perspective.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a sad thing that he was observing. Now it's just so pervasive that nobody thinks twice about it. Okay, what else?
I was just thinking about thinking about how you're saying contributing money, when as soon as you make money to find a spiritual, either a temple or somebody, something to contribute to, you're like tithing. My father always would always encourage us, like as we're growing up, that was his main like mission, like because he was always a working person, so his main way of serving was to contribute a percentage of his income, and he always said do it right off the top before they take taxes out, so that you're giving like the first chunk to Krishna, and then then the government can get whatever they need. But like that was kind of cool.
That's nice. Yeah, this is the idea for Grihastas. That is their preaching, you know, for most of us. What can we contribute economically? Okay, what else? One thing that Prabhupada is writing this in the context of a society where there's a lot more care given in the extended family. So it's much more possible to live on 25% of your income when you have so much support from your family. In modern America, it's a totally different scene. You know, everybody's on their own, and there's no family house. Generally, you know, there's no social system where there's a lot of meals provided, health care provided by family members. You know, it's much more every person for themselves. So the idea of spending 50% of your incomes is for most people just unimaginable. Using 50% for the Lord. Okay, anything else? Ananta, what do you think? Yeah. You look profoundly wrapped in thought. That's called probably call that bachelor daddy. Not married, I understand. You would like to support your family. That, according to the family situation, that might be appropriate. Yeah, it's almost inevitable, though, if you're mixing with money, then you're going to want to be married. Because marriage is a safe place, a safe harbor. Money and business, Prabhupada said, is always dirty. So if you have money, people will want to... the opposite sex will become attracted, and you know they will want to associate with you, and the temptation will be very strong. So marriage is just a safe position from which to earn money, where you can, you know, you can keep your spiritual values intact. It's a noble desire, though. You want to take care of your family and not get married. I appreciate the thought behind that. Okay, anything else? Vaishnava Prabhu? Nope.